Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We're sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. We're with you every day this week in the build-up to Super Bowl 49. And I'm just about with people, Jeff, because I literally just got off a plane. We're straight to the hotel and recording this Wednesday edition, which people will be downloading, I'm sure, early on Thursday morning to listen to it. We wanted to make sure we got something in every day. And you've been around both teams today. Tell us your early impressions of being here in Arizona around the Seahawks and Patriots.
Well, it's really interesting how the two teams are vastly different in how they approach things. New England is very much more rehearsed, very much more practiced in their answers. They don't stray very far. Even a couple of guys that have that kind of twinkle in their eye, and you know that
they want to say something.
Julian Edelman and Gronkowski both started to go a little bit today and kind of had to reel themselves back in a little bit. And the next thing you know, they're on back onto the Seahawks are a great team. We just want to get better and, you know, da, 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 da. But, you know, it was really interesting in the head coaches' conferences how those two are very different. Although Belichick did have a sense of humor, which, you know, is so dry sometimes that, you know, kind of sails right over your head. But he was talking about he got a question today. This is the first all Croatian head coaching matchup in NFL history, and he got that question today, and he handled it really well. But Pete is just, you know, Pete, when you get in there and you listen to him speak, and he's all about everything's positive, and it's all about competition. And he talked about Marshawn today, which was really interesting. He talked about how they as a team, you know, they honor Marshawn's ability to be his own man. And I thought that was really interesting. And then they're a much, much looser group when you talk to them.
Yeah, listen to some quotes from Media Day where LeGarrette Blount said they like to hear themselves talking about the Seahawks. And he said, we're just going to let them talk. I mean, was it that stark a contrast or not really?
Yeah, I thought it really was. And you know, I spent some time today with a number of guys on both teams and coaches on both teams, and even the coaching staffs were much more, you know, low key. And when you talk to the New England coaches, and they really didn't give you anything. And then I sat and talked with Dan Quinn for probably 15 minutes, you know, afterwards when, you know, Seattle was having their press conference, and Golden Pat Rule, and those guys were just really accommodating and very open and very relaxed, and you know, just kind of exactly what the teams are, I guess, reflections of their head coaches.
Marshawn Lynch made headlines at Media Day saying, I'm just here so I won't get fined. He said it 29 times in the course of 5 minutes. Any dramas today, Jeff, with him?
Well, I think, you know, everything's a little bit of a drama with him because, again, he got fined. I don't know if you caught the fact he got fined again big. Significant was what the word was today.
Because of Media Day.
Well, because of wearing an improper hat at Media Day.
He wore a beast. They're after him for any number of reasons.
Right? He wore a beast mode hat, and they fined him. And again, they said significant amount of money.
Okay.
But interesting, too, was the reaction of the Seattle players to him getting fined. And almost to a man, it was like they think that the league's picking on him, and they're, you know, they kind of rally around him. Had a great conversation with Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett, I asked him very pointedly, I said, Michael, is the Seattle Seahawks defense the greatest defense of all time? And he's very, looked me right in the eye and said, Jeff, yes, they are. We are the best defense that's ever played the game. So they're not lacking for confidence.
I saw some quotes before I left from Doug Baldwin, who said, we want to make Marshawn Lynch the MVP of this Super Bowl. So you feel like they are rallying around him. And, you know, there's been a number of things. I mean, ahead of the NFC Championship game, there was threats of him being ejected from that game because he had gold cleats on. He reminds me of when Jim McMahon went to war with the NFL ahead of Super Bowl 20. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. That's very much the same deal. And interestingly enough, in Russell Wilson's presser today, he described his job as the quarterback as, it's my responsibility to feed the beast. Mm. And he was talking about get the ball to Marshawn.
It was, what do you make of the sort of buzz around the Super Bowl generally, Jeff, and your memories of the Super Bowl? I was on the plane today on the way over, and I was looking through some sort of notes that I was, and this will actually be the 30th Super Bowl that I've watched.
Wow.
And, It would have been 31, but the Super Bowl 19, I was 12 years old, and I was big Dan Marino fan by that stage. That was his second year in the NFL. But my dad wouldn't let me stay up and watch the game because obviously it started at 11:30 on a Sunday night, a school night. My dad didn't realize until about 20 years later when I told this story on Radio 5. I sat in our hallway just with the door cracked open while my dad watched the Super Bowl, listening to the whole thing, and then sort of ran upstairs at 3 a.m. just before my dad made his way upstairs. So it's the 30th one for me to watch. And I looked through some of the games, and I can remember where I was for a lot of those games. You know, yeah. You look back, oh, I watched that one with my friend Ian. I watched that one with, you know, I was at that game. I mean, that's what this event does to you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really amazing. You know, you think back to the same things. I go a little further back than you, but, you know, when Joe Namath walked off the field in the Orange Bowl and with his, you know, hand held over his head and given the sign of number one and, you know, being a 10-year-old kid and just being just taken by that whole experience of watching him predict a championship, which at that time was way out of character for most athletes to ever predict that they were going to, you know, win a championship the next day. And then the kick that, you know, when Vinatieri made the kick to beat the Rams and, you know, Patriots Super Bowl, and then watching the Patriots beat Carolina Panthers live in Houston on an unbelievable, what a great game that was. Just so many of them, you know, all of a sudden you remember who you're with or where you're at or just, you know, things that, such significant things in our lives, and we measure them by these games, and that's, again, an indication of just how big this game is.
How much of the talk has been, you know, I know you've only been here a day, but, you know, update us on the Deflategate stuff, and we'll try not to touch on this too much in the podcast. We want it to be about the game, but you know, how much of it is still a conversation every day?
Well, I think that one has kind of died away a little bit. Yeah. I think Mr. Kraft really got after the league, really, you know, and actually challenged the league that if they're found innocent, which he claims they are, then he wants an apology from the league. To be honest with you, Neil, the league has taken some shots today, and there was a big article in USA Today, which is the national paper in the United States, about how the league has not done a good job with damage control, and there's some things that, you know, certainly they can do better, but I think all in all, I think that stuff's kind of taken its rightful place in the back of the line of issues with the Super Bowl, and now the focus has grown more and more as the hours click away towards the game, the focus is getting more and more on the teams and the game.
Let's look at these teams, Jeff, and we talked about, I think it was yesterday's podcast, we recorded it a couple of days ago, we talked about how these coaches, they turn over stones and they look to build teams in, not necessarily in different ways. I mean, everyone has free agents, everyone trades for players, but you know, let's just take the Patriots here. I've highlighted some guys on the flight over. So on offense, they've got one first round draft pick on offense. That's Nate Solder, who you spoke to today. They have in their entire team Vince Wilfork, Devin McCourty, Chandler Jones, and Dont'a Hightower of their active players for this Super Bowl. I mean, so it's funny because when we look at the draft and we pay so much attention to the first round, but there's so much more than that to build in a team, isn't it?
Well, I think particularly when you do it the way they do it, what I would be interested in learning about is how many guys they've got on their football team that were picks that were made when they traded down or out of the first round to gain more picks.
They do that a lot, don't
and
they?
That's interesting, you know, your statistic about the number of first round draft choices, because they're not a big believer as an organization in first round picks. Mm. Their choice would be always, because I think part of this is true too, because they pick most of the time towards the end of the first round that they can trade out of that pick and get maybe two threes for that low one, and their chances are better just because they've got more guys coming in, and you know, the difference between a second round pick and a mid third round is really not that great.
If it's a good draft, it wouldn't make a difference, would it? Really?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's one of the things that when you talk to teams about how they're going to build their teams. I'll just give you Tampa Bay right now as a perfect example. You know, they have a highest pick, right? I believe the highest pick this draft. Well, you know, if you got multiple needs, the smartest thing to do, in my opinion, unless there's just an absolute rock solid quarterback out there that you know is going to be a franchise guy for you, trade that back, get a low round first round pick, and pick up 2 seconds. That would make sense to me.
Get more players for your roster.
Absolutely.
These ones were interesting to me. Yeah, this is how well they've done free agency. And we look at Belichick, the coach, sometimes, and we criticize Belichick, the general manager. He traded for Akeem Ayers, who's now the starting middle linebacker because Jerod Mayo's gone down. And you look who they picked up in free agency. LeGarrette Blount off the scrap heap. Brandon Browner, Patrick Chung came back. Brandon LaFell and Darrell Revis. They hit a few key players in free agency as well in their building.
Yeah, they do a great job of evaluating in free agency. And then you also look at their roster and how many of their guys were third and down guys, you know, where they really do their job, their homework. And, you know, everybody is always going to point to Tom Brady in the sixth as, you know, you get a Hall of Fame quarterback in the sixth round. That's an unbelievable haul. But, you know, Sebastian Vollmer, who's a six-year starter, one of the best tackles in the league, is third rounder. You know, and you look through their roster, you know, Michael Omanonui, who I talked to today, was a low-round draft choice from St. Louis, was there 2 years, got cut, was in, he said today, he told me he was in Washington with the Redskins for 6 hours. Wow. And then they picked, you know, New England has plucked him off the scrap heap, another one of those
guys.
What's
it like for someone like that when they're at the Super Bowl?
Oh, you know what? I asked him that question. You know, he just said it's amazing because, you know, now he's vested in the pension plan because he's been in the league enough years. Yep. He's really a contributor he's a solid player. He's a contributor on the team. Should be in New England for years to come. And how going to the right organization can change a guy's life. Because that guy was on the brink of being out of football.
Seahawks have got a few first rounders as well, but they've not got many as well. You look on their roster, Russell Okung at offensive tackle, Earl Thomas at safety, James Carpenter a guard, Bruce Irvin a first rounder in 2012. I mean, they've gone the same way where they've added players. We talked about this the other day. They've gone late, so both have done a really good job of building their teams, haven't they, Jeff?
Yeah, and you know, talking to Dan Quinn today, what was really interesting, you know, I asked him this question. I said, Dan, you know, you have a profile at corner. Obviously, you want those long corners. Yeah. You got Sherman, you got Maxwell. You know, they go out and get a kid that really didn't play a lot at LSU late in the draft last year that came in and had to play for him some this year. That, you know, they want those kinds of guys. Mm-hmm. They had Browner. And I said, but what about safety? Tell me about safety, because safety is so important in your, you know, single high defense that you play. And he said, we have the same thing at safety. He said, we want one safety who can play sideline to sideline, has got great speed, and then we want one big physical safety. Mm-hmm. And boy, they've got those two guys.
Perfect. I mean, is Earl Thomas for you the best? That sort of range, rangy.
He's
safety?
That best. Yeah, I would say he's that best. Cover the field, good enough to play man coverage. Ball hawk kind of safety. And then, you know, Cam really, Chancellor, this will be interesting about the game, and you and I have discussed this a couple times already. You know, is it going to be him against Gronkowski? You know, and because the one thing, and Chancellor will even say this, his one liability is that he doesn't have great speed, doesn't have catch-up speed as a cover guy. So he's got to play that physical box safety game.
He's going to get some help from his linebackers. I mean, I remember I'm sure it was Philly Brown. So it was in the divisional playoffs, and Philly Brown ran down the field for Carolina, and he got dragged down on a pass interference penalty in the 5-yard line, about 40 yards downfield. And I was like, who was that? And it was Bobby Wagner, stride for stride, with a rookie wide receiver.
Well, the Seahawks were walking out of the interviews today, the defense was kind of walking out by themselves, and you see the linebackers they're impressive looking guys, but all of a sudden Cam Chancellor walks by, and he would have been the biggest of all the linebackers walking out of that place. So, you know, Wagner is not a huge guy in that, but they can run. Their linebackers can all run.
When you look at the secondary, so talented on both teams, with Revis and Kyle Arrington's played well this year. You got Brandon Browner. Which quarterback is going to be able to rely on his receivers to win outside? I mean, which of these quarterbacks has the better wide receivers? You know, forget about tight end for a minute, but wide receivers, is one group better than the other, or are they kind of similar?
You know what? I think they're really very similar. You know, you got two guys outside. If you say who are going to be the outside guys for Seattle, if you say Curse and Baldwin, okay, then you got two guys that are good players. Nobody would rate them as elite level receivers. Some would say they're not even number ones on most NFL teams. Then you look over at the other side and you say, okay, who are your wide receivers? Well, Brandon LaFell is one of them. And if it's Amendola is the other one, then you're looking basically at the same cast of characters, you know, in New England. One's a big guy that's got ability and is starting to become a, you know, reliable, good, high-level NFL receiver in LaFell. But Amendola's, again, not a guy that's going to scare you to run past you. He's good. He's a good quality receiver, but there's not an outside tandem that you go, oh, boy, they've got an advantage there.
I'm going to give you a couple of meaningless stats.
All right,
just
I love
to wrap
them.
Up. We are going to finish.
I love them.
It's going to be a short one tonight because I'm battling the jet lag. Let me give you this one, Jeff. It's the first Super Bowl in 11 years not to feature a quarterback who was a first-round draft pick.
That's good. I love that. I love that. That's a good one.
Sixth rounder and a third rounder.
I love it. That's a great statistic.
And I've got, this is a good one, I think. Super Bowl teams with fewer turnovers. So if you win the turnover battle, you're 36-3 in the Super Bowl. Does that matter?
It absolutely. And it just, you know, confirms with validity what we say all the time. You cannot, in particularly in big games, cannot turn the ball over.
I'm going to see if I can find one more. These are all my highlights of when I've been making my little bits of research on the way over here. Let me see if I can find another good one. This is good radio. This as I leaf through the pages.
We've got them riveted now.
Stay with us, guys. Oh God, I should have prepared this. Let's go back to this one then. All right, so you won't like this one. Teams who've returned an interception for a touchdown in the Super Bowl are 12-0.
Now, that one really doesn't surprise me. I would be really interested to see.
Why? Because it's such an emotional boost.
Well, because anytime you get points out of a side that you don't anticipate points from. For example, kick return for a touchdown.
Yep.
Interception return for a touchdown. You know, that's 7 points. And in these games typically, you know, or should be well-balanced football games. And those kinds of plays are plays that can break a game open.
Mm. Anything else you noticed, Jeff, before I wrap this up and pass
well,
out?
Yeah, one thing that I thought was really interesting today was Pete mentioned it in his press conference, and I asked a couple players about it, and I asked Pete Rhule about it, the coach, and they Seattle guys are not taking being back here for granted. They're not.
Right.
This is not old hat to them. They're embracing the moment and enjoying the moment every bit as much as they did the first one last year.
All right. We're going to wrap it up here on Inside the Huddle. We will be back tomorrow, and we'll be back for longer, I promise you. We'll give you a full half an hour tomorrow, and then we're here every day in the build-up to Super Bowl 49 and straight after the kickoff. This has been a USP content production in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm off to bed. Jeff, say goodnight.
Aloha. Hey, guys.